Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1887, with the release date of October 11th, 2013, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. The 2013 Scouting Jamboree on the Air takes to the air on October the 18th. Hams in Sweden get access to 472 kHz. Complaints pour in about closed government websites. Several hams receive warning notices from the FCC. The South African Radio League announces its Young Scientist Expo winner, and the Dayton Hamvention puts out a call for its 2014 awards. Find out the details on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1887. Coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from Charleston, West Virginia, here is Jim Dameron, NATMW.
The 2013 Scouting Jamboree on the Air is slated for October 18th to the 20th. Amateur Radio Newsline's Mark Abramovich, NT3V, is here with the rest of the story.
Jamboree on the Air, or JOTA as it is known by those who participate, is the largest scouting event in the world. James Wilson, K5ND, is the National Boy Scouts of America coordinator for JOTA in the United States.
Typically, about 700,000 scouts get on the air from 6,000 stations, and roughly 14,000-15,000 radio amateurs making things happen around the event. It's a huge deal worldwide, and that's part of its excitement. It's not just, gee, let's check out the fun technology and the magic of amateur radio, but let's get on and talk to other scouts. Might be in another state, might be across the country, or they could be around the world, and a lot of fun interaction happens reaching out to scouts who are from a completely different culture, but still enjoying scouting and being introduced to amateur radio.
Jamboree on the Air is coordinated by the World Organization of the Scout Movement out of the World Scout Bureau in Geneva, Switzerland. The activity is in its 56th year. Wilson says JOTA operations in the U.S. range from home stations where, say, a den of Cub Scouts or a patrol of Boy Scouts might be introduced to the event by an operator, to setups on an outdoor or larger scale.
There are troops, for example, that are going out on a camp out. One of the dads or maybe a scoutmaster is an amateur radio operator, and they're setting up probably a fairly simple station at the camp out and getting it on the air. And then there are large camporees or merit badge universities or what have you, where they're setting up multiple stations and planning to get literally hundreds, if not thousands, of scouts in front of the radio during Jamboree on the Air.
This year marks the end of an era for one well-known station, HB9S, the station based at the World Scout Bureau.
This year will be its last year because the World Bureau is relocating its offices. It's moving out of Geneva. Pretty much sure it's moving out of Europe. They don't know exactly where, but they do know it will be taking place in 2014. And so this will likely be the last time that HB9S is on the air from Switzerland.
If you're looking for more information about JOTA and want to participate, the best place to look, Wilson says, is www.scouting.org/JOTA.
It gives a list of frequencies, which includes Echolink and D-Star and those nodes as well. So it really provides a great deal of information about Jamboree on the Air. That also, that same site, scouting.org/JOTA, has a link to register your station. And once you've registered your station, you'll be added to an email list and you'll be updated on Jamboree on the Air on all what we call radio scouting activities, which is the broad sweep of amateur radio activities within scouting.
Station registration is still underway, and Wilson says it's not too late to get involved. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mark Abramovich, NT3V, in Philadelphia.
The complete history of the event can be read on Wikipedia at tinyurl.com/scouting-worldwide. Lawyers and others are accusing several federal regulatory agencies of unnecessarily blocking access to websites during the government shutdown. Agencies, including the Federal Communications Commission and the Federal Trade Commission, have entirely shut down their websites, preventing the public from accessing regulations, filings, and other documents. Other federal agencies, including the Environmental Protection Agency, the Food and Drug Administration, and the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, have stopped updating their websites during the shutdown, but old information is still available. The Federal Trade Commission shutdown guide does not directly address whether the website should be kept available during a shutdown. Instead, it directs the agency to retain up to 6 information technology employees to work to ensure the integrity and security of the agency's information infrastructure and its availability for use by exempt employees pursuing accepted and essential law enforcement actions during the shutdown. The FCC shutdown plan also did not mention cutting off access to its website. According to the plan, the agency retained 4 employees for critical information technology issues. Congressional Republicans have accused the Obama administration of maximizing the pain of the shutdown to increase Democrats' leverage in negotiations. Because of the shutdown, the FTC and FCC were unable to comment. More on this story can be found on the web at tinyurl.com/government-websites-down. The U.S. Army Mars Gateway at Fort Huachuca, Arizona, is operating on its normal schedule during the government shutdown, but routine administrative activity is on hold. This is because computer systems are down and no membership paperwork can be processed for the duration of the physical crisis. As a civilian contractor not covered by the shutdown, Operations Officer David McGinnis, K7UXO, is completing final preparations for the November 3rd to the 4th National Communications Exercise. Also, the Mars National Net is still functioning normally. While the tick and the announcements over WWV and WWVH are still available over the airwaves, the current deadlock in Washington over the federal budget has shut down the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST. It has also closed most NIST and affiliated websites until further notice. As a result, the NIST is warning that its time signals may not be 100% accurate until staffing returns. The National Vulnerability Database and the NIST Internet Time Service websites will continue to be available. A limited number of other websites may also be available. Take a look at tinyurl.com/2DT317 to see what's online and what's not. A notice will be posted at www.nist.gov once operations resume. According to news reports, the partial federal shutdown is preventing a group of radio amateurs visiting Wake Island to commemorate a World War II massacre. A dozen operators using the special call K9W were supposed to be on Wake Island as this newscast goes to air. They were working to assemble their gear in Hawaii for transport to Hickam Air Force Base and then on to Wake Island. Instead, after months of preparation, the trip is on indefinite hold because of a paperwork delay the group attributes to the partial federal shutdown. It still hopes to make the trip once the government funding crisis is solved. Please keep an eye on wake2013.org for the latest details, and we'll have more DX News later in this week's report. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the Xerox Amateur Radio Club System, WD6CZH, in El Segundo and Long Beach, California. According to the ARRL, the FCC's Enforcement Bureau recently made public warning letters to several individuals. This for alleged infractions of the Part 97 Amateur Radio Service Rules, or Section 301 of the Communications Act of 1934. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Imby, KB3TZD, has the details.
Back on June 24th, FCC Special Counsel Laura Smith sent identical warning notices to Eric J. Christensen, KN0CW, and Thomas E. Barnes, N7OVC, of Reno, Nevada. This to inform them that the trustee of the WA7DG repeater in Sparks, Nevada, had requested that they refrain from using this system. In her notices, Smith said that the written request was issued as a result of the failure of the two hams to follow operational rules set forth by the licensee and control operators of the repeater system for their users. She went on to note that the commission requires that repeaters be under supervision of a control operator. Also, that it not only expects but requires that such control operators be responsible for the proper operation of the repeater system. As such, control operators may take whatever steps they deem appropriate to ensure compliance with the repeater rules. Smith then advised the two licensees that the FCC expects them to abide by the repeater owner's request and any similar requests by other repeater licensees, control operators, or trustees of other systems. She also said that continued use of the WA7DG repeater could subject the two hams to severe penalties, including monetary forfeiture, a modification proceeding to restrict the frequencies upon which you may operate, or even license revocation. On August 9th, Smith took on a high-frequency band issue. This in a letter to Jack Hartley, K4WSB of Tampa, Florida. In it, Smith cited evidence received from members of the Amateur Auxiliary Official Observers that Hartley had operated outside of his advanced class privileges on four separate occasions while attempting to contact the station on Kwajalein Atoll in the South Pacific. Smith's letter to Hartley noted that, according to the official observers, the Kwajalein operator refused the contact, noting that Hartley was not authorized to be operating in that part of the band. She noted that after sending Hartley three previous notices, the OOs contacted the commission and asked it to remind K4WSB that his continued attempts to contact the operator on Kwajalein Atoll constituted a violation of the amateur service rules. Smith cautioned Hartley that continued operation outside of the parameters of his license could lead to enforcement action that could include revocation or suspension and fines. Three prior instances noted by the official observers occurred in 2007 and 2008. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
The FCC also sent warnings to several non-hams for operating without a license. That part of the report next week. The Federal Communications Commission's Los Angeles Enforcement Bureau has cited a company known as FCC Frequency for marketing unauthorized RF devices in the U.S. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, reports.
The case began when the Los Angeles FCC field office received complaints alleging that a company was selling and installing non-certified low-power FM transmitters. In addition, the company was also reportedly selling and installing the gear to individuals and entities that had no commission authorization to operate the devices. The company's name? FCC Frequency, that's FCC Frequency spelled as one word, came to the regulatory agency's attention when it was inspecting an unlicensed station in the Los Angeles suburb of Arleta. At the time, the operator showed the agents a purchase contract for a 100-watt transmitter manufactured in the Dominican Republic that he had bought in March for around $6,000 from FCC Frequency. The regulatory agency noted that at the time of its investigation that the company's website said it specialized in low-power FM radio station equipment sales and installation and encouraged non-profit organizations to install their own low-power FM radio station. The website also advertised that the company would help applicants to file for new LPFM, that's low-power FM, licenses and make major changes to existing stations in the upcoming filing window, which is supposed to open on October 15th. A check of the company's website on October 9th now only shows an almost blank page with a short message that reads, quote, new.fccfrequency.com is coming soon. In its citation, the FCC told FCC Frequency that it must stop marketing the unauthorized devices and avoid any recurrence of the alleged misconduct. The company must also inform the FCC within 30 days of the date of the citation who it sold RF equipment to since January of 2012. It must also supply contact information for each purchaser and copies of sales contracts. Not responding in the 30 days could lead to further sanctions. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, in the newsroom in Los Angeles.
More on this story on the web, tinyurl.com/transmitter supplier-cited, C-I-T-E-D. It's nearly 2 years since the first ever nationwide test of the emergency alert system, and the FCC is now ready to look at making some procedural changes based on what it learned November 9, 2011. This as the agency begins accepting public comments on several equipment and operational issues. The FCC says the goal is to create a dialogue with broadcasters and equipment companies to develop a list of recommendations for what action the agency needs to take. Obviously, nothing much is going to happen until Congress passes a measure that fully funds the government's agencies, but more on this issue on the web at tinyurl.com/EAS-revisited. The South African Radio League-sponsored Expo for Young Scientist Award has been won by Justin Boyce, a student at St. John's College in Johannesburg. Boyce set out to predict future solar coronal mass ejection activity by providing a correlation between the number of CMEs and the sunspot cycle. His findings were that coronal mass ejections and the sunspot cycle are both caused by intense activity in the sun's magnetic field, and therefore strong correlations can be expected. Also, that predictions on the future of CMEs can be made using the repetitive pattern of the solar sunspot cycle. The press release from the South African Radio League did not say if Boyce was or was not a radio amateur. Some names in the news. First up comes word that Nate Brightman, K6OSC, stepped aside as the W6RO wireless room manager aboard the Queen Mary museum ship anchored in Long Beach, California. Brightman, now 96, was the W6RO wireless room manager for 34 years. Prior to that, K6OSC devoted a decade arranging for the GB5QM Last Voyage amateur radio operation from the Queen Mary. He then was responsible for establishing W6RO as the club station of the Associated Radio Amateurs of Long Beach. K6OSC cited his recent illness, hospitalization, and his advanced age as reasons for his decision to step aside effective October 1st. He is succeeded as W6RO station manager by David Atkins, N6HHR. The Psychology of a QRMer is the title of a feature article authored by James Milner, WB2REM. In it, Milner, who is a licensed psychologist with 35 years of experience, delves into the thinking of those who cause problems for their fellow hams. Without giving away any of the plot, we'll say that Milner is very meticulous in separating unintentional from intentional interference. This as he looks into the underlying factors of operators who cause these kinds of problems on the amateur bands. The Psychology of a QRMer makes good reading, especially if you've ever been the intentional target of a jammer. You'll find it beginning page 44 of the October issue of CQ Magazine. This is Ham Radio News for today's radio amateur. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. As almost every ham knows, the number of sunspots rises and falls in a regular cycle that repeats every 11 years, but there's a lot more to the story. Here's Amateur Radio Newsline's Cheryl Lassick, K9BIK, with that part of the story.
Sunspots are among the least dramatic activities in a solar cycle. This is because they are easy to count and closely correlated with flares and other indications of solar activity. As such, astronomers and scientists have used them for centuries to monitor variations in the sun's activity. But it is solar flares and coronal mass ejections that pose the biggest risk to power grids and communication systems here on Earth. These take place when billions of tons of solar plasma erupt from the surface of the sun and are flung out into space at speeds up to millions of miles per second. Variations in the amount of heat and light reaching the Earth's surface as a result of the changes in the 11-year cycle are tiny. Total solar output reaching the surface varies by just 1.3 watts per square meter, or 0.1%, between the maximum and minimum phases of a solar cycle. However, some researchers say that even this minuscule variation has profound impacts on climate and weather. They note that rainfall, cloud formation, and river runoff are all strongly correlated with the sun's 11-year cycle. All in all, the impact is far smaller than the warming associated with other sources of climate change. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Cheryl Lessig, K9BAK in Zion, Illinois.
One thing that solar activity cannot explain are long-term trends in global temperatures, such as those associated with global warming. That said, there are some researchers who believe that it may have a noticeable impact over shorter timescales. NASA's Lunar Atmosphere and Dust Environment Explorer, or LADEE, L-A-D-E-E, spacecraft, fired its engine Sunday morning, October 6th, slowing it enough to be captured by lunar gravity and placing it into orbit around the moon. Once given the green light, the spacecraft will begin its mission to study the moon's exotic and almost transparent atmosphere, which is highly affected by space weather. That information will be sent by radio back to Earth for further analysis. Plans to launch an unmanned high-altitude balloon called Habex have received the approval of South Africa's Central Airspace Management Unit. The launch will take place from the Klerksdorp Airport between 0600 and 0800 local time Saturday, November 30th. The payload is expected to reach an altitude of about 130,000 or more feet before the balloon bursts and returns to the ground. Chris Griffenberg, ZS6COG, is coordinating the project. He says that the mission will carry an automatic packet reporting system, which will allow the monitoring of the balloon trajectory via the internet at aprs.fi. Habex is a joint project of the Gauteng Department of Education and the South African Radio League. It is specifically aimed at getting young people involved in scientific activities as a precursor to following a career in communication and electronics. North American and Western European international shortwave broadcasters aren't the only ones feeling today's financial squeeze. RIA Novosti reports that the Voice of Russia will cut its shortwave service as of January 1, 2014. However, the government shortwave broadcaster, originally known as Radio Moscow, has not confirmed this plan of action, according to the SWLing Post. The station has been broadcasting since 1922. The Northern California DX Foundation has announced the establishment of the W7OO Contribution Challenge. October 15th through the end of December, longtime DXer Bill Everett, W7OO, will match contributions received by the Northern California DX Foundation. For those contributors who file U.S. income tax returns, contributions to Northern California DX Foundation are tax deductible under Section 501c3 entity with the IRS. More information at www.ncdxf.org. NDX, word that CT2HPM is once again operating on the air from Angola, operating as D2CT. He plans to be there through November 15th, operating PSK-31 and RIDI on 20 through 10 meters, including the work bands, QSL via CT2HPM. W1CDC will be operational from Guyana as 8R1A between October 13th and November 1st. Activity will be holiday style, 80 through 10 meters, using CW and SSV, QSL via his home call sign, direct or by the Bureau. YB9WZJ and YD9RQX will be active using their home calls, stroke P, from Wazio Island between October 16th and the 22nd. Operations on 40, 20, and 15 meters using SSB only. QSL only via their home call signs. Members of the Andoran Amateur Radio Union will be active as C37NL from Andorra during the CQWWDX SSB contest. The dates are October 26th and 27th, QSL via C37URA. N0HJZ will be active as C6ARW from Grand Bahama Island between October 22nd to the 29th. Operations on 30, 17, and 12 meters using CW and RIDI. QSL via his home call sign, direct with sufficient postage, or by the Bureau. Lastly, AA1AC will be on the air stroke 6W from La Simone, Senegal between December 8th and the 14th. No information on times or frequencies was given. QSL direct or by the Bureau to his home call sign. And finally this week, the Dayton Hamvention has announced that it is soliciting nominations for its awards for the 2014 Amateur of the Year, Special Achievement, Technical Excellence, and Club of the Year. Amateur Radio Newsline Stefan Kenford, N8WB, has the details.
The Amateur of the Year award goes to the individual who's made a long-term outstanding commitment to the advancement of amateur radio. The Special Achievement Award honors someone who has made an outstanding contribution to the advancement of amateur radio. This is usually someone who has spearheaded, but not necessarily limited to spearheading, a significant project. The Technical Excellence Award is for the person who has made an outstanding technical advancement in the field of amateur radio. Last, but by no means least, the Club of the Year Award goes to an organization which has made a significant contribution to the advancement of amateur radio. The Hamvention Awards Committee makes its decisions on all awards based in part upon the information it receives and not on the number of nominations submitted for a given candidate. Documentation that informs the award committee of nominees' accomplishments may include magazine articles, newsletters, newspaper clippings, and even videos. These materials become the property of Hamvention and will not be returned. The winners will be recognized at the 2014 Hamvention, which runs May 16th to the 18th. To be considered, nominations must be received by January 17, 2014. Additional details on these awards and nomination form are available on the Dayton Hamvention website at tinyurl.com/Hamvention-awards-2014. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, NAWB, not far from Dayton in Wadsworth, Ohio.
Once again, forms and other information are on the web at tinyurl.com/hamvention-awards-2014. The last day for a nomination to be postmarked is January 17th, 2014. Nominations may be sent by email to theawards@hamvention.org or mailed to Dayton Hamvention Awards, P.O. Box 1446, Dayton, Ohio, 45401-1446 in the USA. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Pen DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, Twit TV, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF at the editor's desk, I'm Jim Dameron, N8TMW in Charleston, West Virginia, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2013, all rights reserved.